Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And today we're going to talk about a conversation we should have started having almost 400 years ago, which is the land expropriation without compensation, because we were doing it to them, and now, you know, the sort of the reverse is going to happen as whites. The issue is emotional, as President Ramaphosa has already said. It's potentially very dangerous for the economy. It's potentially very good for society. I frankly don't know what to think. We're going to talk about it among ourselves. We've got some guests who are going to call in. But yesterday, Tim Cohen, Julius Malema, and the EFF won a victory of sorts.
No, not a victory of sorts, a victory without any sort. No, South African politics has been remolded by this. You know, I think it's really gone off in a different direction. This is
with this vote yesterday.
With this vote yesterday, because it's not just about land. It's the EFF has also put in question its sort of quasi-alliance or non-alliance alliances with the DA, which means that the DA could lose, you know, all three of the metros in absolutely no time.
Surely it was naive of them ever to think that association would last beyond Jacob Zuma being president.
Yeah, well, this is, maybe you can say that, but I mean, generally speaking, it was an open question that has now been answered. Yeah. You know, so we're really on a different footing at this point.
Yeah. And Ron, quickly before we speak to our first guests, what did you feel looking at that debate yesterday? I mean, was it over the top? Was Julius right? Are there differences between the ANC and the EFF? Do they both want the same thing? The EFF seems to want to nationalise land.
Yeah.
ANC doesn't quite say that.
The ANC is kind of like careful about nationalising the land, and the ANC is worried about food security as well as shaking up the economy and all the confidence, right? But in general regard, I think they both agree on the same thing. EFF is more radical about it, so. But they're both on the same page, in a sense. But I think the ANC just worried about how far they push it. And also the ANC, for the past 20-30 odd years, hasn't done as good a job at it in any case. Almost giving in to the fact that maybe our first attempts weren't well. But the EFF is more radical. But this shift is always going to happen, as you say.
Is there a two-nightering between the ANC and the EFF over this? I mean, do you see this as the beginning of the EFF going back to the mothership or not?
Not exactly. Julius Malema will use anything to get attention. Jacob Zuma is gone because he used Jacob Zuma effectively to get attention, and he did get it. Now there's absolutely nothing left on the table, and the issue is here. The issue is not about the land. The EFF does not actually want to nationalize land. They just want attention. They want to grab as much votes as they can. That's what's going on here. And the ANC is playing along because the ANC resolved in the conference that it would do this without compensation, but it can't now turn the clock and say, actually, no, we're not supporting the EFF on this.
Sure. Votes or not, it's still an issue, right? It's whatever you can say, whether the EFF is playing along, all politicians want votes, but there's still underlying, there's an issue of land that needs to be addressed.
The issue of the land is absolutely an issue, but right now it is not the land that is in question here. What the EFF is doing is to attract attention to itself. Its biggest campaigner, Jacob Zuma, and they need something else. And that very point of this thing now is the land, the emotion behind land ownership. That's what they are using.
We've got on the line with us Theo Boshoff, who is head of legal intelligence at AgBiz. And Theo, thank you very much for joining us. Do you get what Sikonathi is saying when he says that this is an emotional issue for black people in South Africa, as I suppose for a lot of white people as well? And can the vote yesterday in Parliament be implemented in a way that doesn't damage the economy?
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I think the critical thing to note is that it absolutely is an emotional issue. But the underlying rationale of where this came from isn't that there's anything wrong with the institution of property rights. The institution of property rights is internationally regarded as one of the platforms in which to build growth and develop economically. The challenge is that property rights hasn't been extended to the majority of the citizens in South Africa. So in other words, it's been the failure of government to extend property rights to the majority of South Africans which has actually led us to this position.
And how does yesterday's vote go any way towards fixing that?
It would have to depend on what the specific wording that they come up with as amendments to Section 25.
Yeah.
Because we know that they said an amendment must take place and it must be balanced with economic considerations and the need not to harm food security.
Yeah.
It's very difficult at this point to know exactly what sort of wording they will come up with, but you'll likely see an attempt at least at some sort of balance.
So there'll be conditions under which expropriation without compensation can take place, and they'll have to be very clearly defined in law.
It will certainly have to be the case. I mean, if you look at the current Section 25, and this is one of the challenges that we face, is that the emotional issue, understandably, is land. But Section 25 refers to property in its wider sense. So it can be movable property, it can be intellectual property. That protection of property rights, and as well as the provisions relating to expropriation, refers to all property rights. So the first interesting thing that we'll have to see is how it is possible to separate land from all other property in its application.
Let me just ask the rest of my panel whether they'd like to ask you anything.
Maybe I could ask Theo. Is it humanly possible to have large-scale land nationalisation not affect the South Africa's food security and you know the sanctity of property rights? Is that isn't that such a big contradiction that it's just impossible to fill that gap? Or do you see a way that it might be?
I think there could potentially be ways to mitigate the impact, but to achieve no impact, I don't think is possible. I absolutely agree with you on that. I mean, if you look at the South Africa's agricultural sector, it's highly commercialized and very mechanized, and we rely a lot on technology and biotechnology in terms of seeds and so on and infrastructure to try and remain internationally competitive. So farmers require credit for that, and financial institutions place a reliance on the value of land to supply credit. So if the value of land is destroyed, you'll likely see the agricultural sector really struggle to access finance. And the knock-on effects on food security will have to be substantial, because whether you get expropriated or not and whether the new beneficiary is competent or not, to a large extent will be undercut by the fact that everyone will struggle to access finance, which will bring down the national production, which will mean that we'll have to import food at import parity price, which will raise the price of the average food basket, which once again affects the poorest of the poor in South Africa.
Theo, thank you very much for joining us. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
So go back, Sukunati, to what you were saying. So there is a land issue, but the EFF has got its own thing, right? It's trying to draw attention to itself. What is the land issue?
The land issue is that, let's just go back to that armed robbery.
Yeah.
That happened all the way starting in 1652. Did you say you white people took our land?
Yeah.
Yes.
We did.
No one has returned our land. In fact, they went and took even more land from black people.
Yeah.
And then formalized it in the 1913 Land Act, and there's been other dispossessions after that. Now, what needs to be sorted out is access of the indigenous people to land, one. But Zimbabwe has shown us how not to do it. Half of Zimbabwe is here, yet they have got the land back. Now, the ANC and the EFF need to tell us what in this current legislation, Section 25 of the Constitution, is blocking them.
Way.
Yes. They also need to go back and tell us, over the past 23 years, there's been land claims, there's been restitutions, there's been everything. The government is the biggest owner of land in South Africa, the state. Which land exactly are they going to take from who, and for what reasons? Why can't they transfer the lands they have? You've got hundreds of thousands of black farmers today who are squatting on farms where this government will not give them title deeds so that they can own the land and then invest.
We've also now got on the phone Professor Cyril Mbata, who's from teaches at the Graduate School of Business Leadership at UNISA. Thanks for joining us, Professor. You've got an interesting approach to what happened yesterday to land expropriation without compensation, and you put out a press release on it this morning, and you're not happy with what you saw.
Well, people are not happy with too personal. I just think that morally and technically, like I say, in the case that I stand, this is not justifiable in a sense that the state itself over time historically has participated in legitimizing purpose of in law of
We're going to let you go for a moment, Cyril, and come back to you. There's a very bad line. The point he was making in the release he made this morning, we'll come back to him in a moment, was that the state is over many years has legitimized obviously the theft of that land by creating title, and it's passed on, and every iteration of the state has so far done that, and it could be sued potentially for allowing a piece of land, whatever the Constitution may now say, for allowing a piece of land to be taken away without compensation. So the state, he's arguing, is responsible over centuries for the way land is owned.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching the debate yesterday, I thought it was really thoroughly depressing because, you know, there was this like explosion of, you know, grandstanding and finger pointing and, you know, all of that sort of stuff, and very little kind of specifics about what exactly how exactly this is going to be managed. So they say it's not going to be a free for all, but I'm extremely worried that they have lit a felt fire here that they think they could control, but they're not going to be able to control when it you know finally sort of comes down to it. And you know,
why, you're nodding your head, Ron. Why would they not be able to control it? Surely you can just say under these circumstances, written down, here it is, you can expropriate without compensation.
But Peter, what do you do? Who are you going to expropriate from? Are you going to expropriate from selected farmers, right? And you're going to give those selected farms to selected farmers, right?
No.
So who do you select?
No.
Which one do you select? You say do everyone.
No.
So you're endorsing take all the land.
No, I'm not, absolutely not at all.
Right.
I'm saying you don't know what a farm
is. Tim is a farmer.
You have no idea. So there might be a piece of land that's lying.
Disclosure.
There's a piece of land that's kind of lying fallow and not being used. And let's say there's 12,000 hectares which is privately owned. The Oppenheimers own a gazillion hectares up in the Northern Cape or Northwest, right? You've been there.
I haven't, actually, but anyway.
All right, I've just been told I have to shut up, and we're going to go to a break, and we'll continue arguing with each other after this. As I was saying, so, Tim, what I was trying to explain was that you might expropriate a farm in order to build a city on it. You don't have to build another, you don't have to just change the farmer. I mean, you might decide that, you know, instead of having a whole lot of shanty towns around Johannesburg, that you build a new city like the Chinese do. The Chinese can build a city in a month, you know. I mean, we don't work as hard as the Chinese, but it's quite possible that you could use land to change the structure of the country. And it wouldn't be a bad thing at all, you know. It need be, provided it's not nationalized.
But that's not the debate here. The debate is not about you know, expropriating land to build roads and, you know, infrastructure and all of those sort of things. That's completely legitimate. All governments do that.
But this is my point. We don't know what the debate's about. Neither do you. People might think it's about replacing one farmer with another, but it can't possibly be.
Of course it's about that. Why is it not that?
That's the thing with populism, right? When you get politicians like the ANC and EFF now taking something up, that's why I come back to agreeing with Sikonathi in a sense. You give him this issue, it's a heart emotive issue, and it's a very popular issue, it's great for 2019 and so on. But we must sit here and think about, well, can our policymakers as a stand handle this debate well? And I'm looking at them now, EFF and ANC, and I'm also, but that's my worry. Do they actually know what they're dealing with?
Yeah.
And it's why I was nodding to Tim, right? Because, okay, this is an issue, it is there, yeah. But they're raising, and it's great for 2019 elections, but
yeah.
Do they actually know what the implications
are? That,
like, that is my worry.
Because if you were able to get your hands on some land, you could do amazing things. You could create an economic boom in this country if you did the right things.
They are able to define what the problem is. Where is the bottleneck?
Yeah.
I repeat again, the state is holding the biggest chunk of land. There are people, farmers, white farmers, who have sold the land that they've been owning back to the government. That land has not been transferred to people like myself. Mm. My Nguni cattle are still in need of land.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got Cyril Mbata back from the UNISA Graduate School of Business Leadership. Sorry, Cyril, we couldn't hear you that well earlier on. You had a point of view about the debate and the its conclusion yesterday.
Sure. So I watched some of it. So some of your guests are right that the actual problems are about what the land is then used for afterwards. And for the last, say, 20 years, we've observed that the bottlenecks are around how much land first has been redistributed, and about land reform programs, the restitution as well as the redistribution. And after the land has been returned to beneficiaries in both of the programs, we have found issues in terms of the level of productivity on those lands. And I have to agree with the EFF around restitution claims where villagers or individuals have been put back on land, that we cannot use the same yardstick in terms of trying to measure whether the land is useful or not. It's been documented by some of the research that communities in those lands under the restitution can decide whether or not they want to use the land for commercial purposes, whether it's for social purposes, for religious rituals, burials, whatever it is that they decide on. But on redistribution programs, government has got clear aims that the land should be used for economic benefits or previously disadvantaged individuals. So now we have backlogs in those areas, and I think this is now a reaction because the government itself has not been able to meet its own target set at the 2005 land summit. So in a sense, yeah, this is now used, I would agree that it is used as a political discussion for whatever purposes. I don't agree that I don't think it's moral, I don't think it's technically viable to not compensate people who receive the land, and they've received the land under law, and the state itself has legitimized the status quo in terms of who owns the land, who participated, and most of the land is actually owned by the state that was previously stolen. So for the state not to compensate now is relegating, I think, on its responsibilities. And I don't think it's legal. It would require constitutional review, of course, but I think at the end of the day, it's not actually going to solve the actual problems of meeting the target in the land reform project as a whole, under the two programs that I've spoken about.
Thank you very much, Cyril Mbata. Well, we can talk about that panel. The state has been completely useless at transferring land, at redistributing it, at giving land back, but in the form of restitution. That would be your biggest worry now, wouldn't it? I mean, about with this, that actually that this law would pass and it would just be a free-for-all.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I don't think there's any question about the problem isn't one of morality. I mean, obviously there should be a land restitution program. Obviously, you know, that this is a, you know, it's a huge kind of political issue that has been handled in a sort of slightly offhand way. But the problem is mathematical, because when sort of whites arrived and stole all the land in the country, or in most of it anyway, the population of the country was
all of it.
Sorry?
You mean all of it?
There was places, where there were. But there was 5 million people, 4 million people in the sort of whole of the country. Now we're talking about 55 million people. So the question really is what is it possible to achieve justice, financially? By giving, so there's 200,000 farms in South Africa, by giving those 200 that are farmed and owned by white people. So if you gave all of those farms, if you nationalized all of the 200,000 farms and you gave them all to kind of black people, would that make the other, 54 million black people feel better? Would that satisfy the justice
land
question,
anger.
The land anger question? I don't know.
Jim, the whole issue here, black people are never going to be rich by taking from white people. That's just a fact. Two, how do you know if Manjanja Investments owns a piece of farm? How do you know if that is actually owned by Tim Cohen or by Sikonathi Manjanja? Why exactly are you going to expropriate? Is this issue about land, or is it about race, or is it about the EFF trying to be relevant post Jacob Zuma era?
Is this not just about everything of black middle class and the growth that it had over the past 20 years has all been based on, unsecured lending, because the black middle class has never had access to land to lend against to build wealth, right? And there's always been almost the step below that black Africans have over white Africans. When this fundamentally, the eye on the prize is putting some equity into black hands where they can borrow off and build wealth. Is that fundamentally the question that all of this must one day answer? And then from there you can build
black
wealth.
But if it's nationalized,
right?
There's no equity to be raised.
The solutions here that have been put, are we actually solving the fundamental question with how do you build black wealth and not create African bank or create a capital and give me unsecured lending? How fundamentally
right
do we change? That is why black South Africans are always two steps behind white South Africans, and always will be until fundamentally
where
that's the problem.
Where we are right now, no one is trying to find any solution to any problem. Yeah. We're manufacturing a problem that does not exist, and this is actually, I repeat again, an issue not at all about the land. The state is in possession of unused land.
But what about tribal authorities?
Yes. Millions
if I stay on the King's land, the Zulu King's land, I can't, and he gives me a great and a huge acre of land, even now, I can't go to the bank and borrow money off that land because it belongs to the Zulu team, right?
Yes.
These are all fundamental, all these things need to
young man,
be
better
fixed.
Be a bit more respectful.
Oh, but
it belongs to the king.
Yes, supposedly it's my king. I'm not a monarch.
However, you can be a little less disrespectful to the person who owns your land, who I think is in jail at the moment.
But Seko, do you really think that this is not a moral issue?
Tim, I don't know about morals or otherwise. What I do know is that in South Africa you've got 90% of the population black people, those who can't buy farms have no access to land whatsoever. And then you've got the state, which should be holding land on behalf of the people of South Africa, withholding that land from the very people that actually need it. The failure here has been the government. It has failed to
why is it withholding? What would make
it's inefficiency, it's corruption. Just now,
more importantly, it's politics. It's politics.
Exactly.
Because they have to, in order to get control over the land that the king,
my king, my
they've got to disenfranchise him, right?
Mm.
Which they're never going to do. Yeah. They know that, politically they could never do that.
Yeah.
So all of the Nkunyama Trust land, which is huge, by the way, half of KZN that's why they're looking for a different model, which is to put all land into a sort of quasi-nationalized, sort of trust situation. So you know, to get around this problem, you know, the which
is the ANC is looking for that.
No, well, the EFF's original statement was that they're looking for the state to nationalise all land.
Yeah.
But in the debate yesterday, they said they would go with the ANC's, you know,
which is a slightly watered-down version. Yeah, the government should own land, but not, he didn't say all the land.
They shouldn't disturb the finances of the country.
We've got just a few minutes, and we've also had the cabinet reshuffle this week. And I was wondering, Sikonadi, what you thought of it particularly, actually.
On the matter of land, they put exactly the proper man there to deal with the Zulu Ingonyama Trust situation, Zweli Mkhize.
Yeah.
Perfect. He's going to go to His Majesty and say, Hlangalo Mhlabathi, we need to get back the land from you. Now, giving quite a serious problem.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
But and he must contribute first R5 Zweli Mkhize himself to fight against
to
himself
fight against
because he's a Zulu man. Yeah. He will contribute R5 and help the Ingonyama Trust to fight off.
The Zulu King at least seems to have a sense of humor when it comes to interactions with politicians, of whom I'm sure he has enough coming to see him. But there were some surprises in the cabinet reshuffle. Your friend and mine, Melusi Gigaba, keeps his job, or keeps a job, in a very important ministry. Batabile Dlamini still there, you know, in not so great a portfolio perhaps.
I would think Cyril is banking on the Hawks doing their job, so they will actually reshuffle
people. They haven't done their job so far.
He is hoping they will, because Melusi Gigaba still needs to stand before a judge and tell them what happened to the state, to Eskom and Transnet and Daniel. So he's completely in an undeserved position, as is Batabile Dlamini and everything. I would have loved to see Cyril put in Nkosazana Dlamini in social
development
and fire Batabile Dlamini there. But hey,
but isn't it interesting that in the party he's kept his friends close to him, physically, and in the government he's kept his enemies close to him in terms of his deputy and Nkosazana and Batabile Dlamini? Why would you do that? You know, because in the party you need people to look after you, because you can't be there the whole time.
Yeah, I think the reshuffle, it's a bit ugly with regards to Batabile and so on. But I think actually quite brilliant, right? Where you give Batabile a budget of 200 odd million. Can you imagine R1 million going missing in that Department of Women? They're not obvious. Where's it gone to compared to the billions she had at SAS and so on?
That's enough insults from you, Rondavi. That's enough for us this week. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you again.